Amazon gift cards is the largest digital currency being used for remittance today. It's not Bitcoin, it's Amazon gift cards.
Hello, welcome to episode 24 of The Bitcoin Game. I'm Rob Mitchell. Earlier this month, I got to speak with Andrew Lee from Purse, a company that allows people to use Bitcoin to buy stuff on Amazon, and at pretty large discounts. My own first thought about Purse was that it was some strange company trying to shoehorn its way between Bitcoiners and Amazon. But after talking to Andrew, I see Purse as a company that is helping to spread the use and adoption of Bitcoin throughout the world. Hope you enjoy this interview.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Andrew. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm great, Andrew. Well, I guess I met you at the State of Digital Money conference where you spoke on a panel, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So I'm going to start with a really basic question. It's just Purse, not Purse.io, right?
Yes. So we started off as Purse.io, so people can find it on the site easier. We haven't had the fortune to buy Purse.com yet, but it is in the works. So Purse is the name we're going by right now.
I'm curious about your background. What were you doing before you got into Bitcoin?
After college, I was an engineer at LG, the Korean consumer electronics manufacturer. My first foray into payments was through a startup that I founded with a couple of my friends in Atlanta.
May I take you back to LG? Just because I find that really interesting, too. Can you tell me more about your job as an engineer at LG?
Sure. So we were working on various projects to streamline processes for manufacturing. I help open up a factory, if you will, or a manufacturing facility in Georgia. We help, I work with the R&D lab in Korea on new products as well and bring them to the American market.
Wow. So that just sounds amazing to me that right out of college, you're doing that type of work. Can you help me understand how that works a little better?
Sure. So, one of the things I had kind of, I guess, going for myself is the engineering background, but as well as my Korean descent. LG is a Korean company, and I think the bilingual kind of aspect works well.
Andrew, I'm going to stop you for a second. It sounds like your mic is maybe rubbing against something.
I'm borrowing Matt Bitcoin's microphone.
Oh, beautiful. Are you in his studio?
Yeah. We hired him about a month and a half ago. So we use one of our conference rooms. He uses one of his conference rooms most of the time to shoot his videos and curate World Crypto Network.
And you hired him to do what?
Marketing and community management.
Very cool. So back to LG, you were...
I think how I got the job really was because I was bilingual and had that engineering background. I was there for 3 years and it was a great experience. I learned a ton about managing companies, doing international commerce, product development, as well as managing employees.
So that just sounds like an amazing experience to get at such a young age. What happened after that?
I was working maybe 60 to 80 hours on a given week. After 3 years, I was getting a little burned out. And I was really interested in web development as well as payments. One of my good friends was working as a banker in merchant services in Atlanta. And he was describing what he was doing at his company, which was basically signing up online merchants with credit card processing. This is an area that fascinated me greatly. And so he left and we founded a company together. And this was while I was still at LG. I quit, maybe about a month after we started and to devote my time full time to the new payments project. And this was 2009, not in 2010, pre-Bitcoin. We were really fascinated about how difficult it was for merchants to get credit card processing. Most people think that you just hook up Stripe, or which didn't exist back then, or PayPal, and you're ready to go. And the barriers there were just exorbitant on these merchants. So we underwrote their contracts. We assessed their risk, looked at their chargeback history, credit reports, made sure they were registered with the IRS, and so on and so forth. forth. And it was a terribly manual process. And most of the time, what we found was that we couldn't process a lot of merchants, a lot of very legitimate businesses, because the chargeback risk was way too high. And to no fault of the business, but because the payment rails weren't built for it, I was exposed to, at that time, much of the inefficiencies of credit cards.
You said like you were particularly intrigued in payments. What had you so interested in that area?
So, one of the things that, I started noticing, and it's played out, over this decade, is that more and more successful, profitable businesses are shifting online. Reaching a global market, or at least not a regional market, was a huge opportunity for all kinds of businesses to start transacting online. I really saw payment, in addition to web development, as the main barriers for democratized commerce, if you will. And so at the time, we were really working on both integrating payment solutions into websites, as well as dealing with the what I call now legacy banking infrastructure to get the proper permissions to start business online.
Interesting. Well, I certainly could guess where this is going to end up.
Right, right. So for 2 years, we were running this startup in Atlanta. It's called Superior Payment Solutions. It was mostly a B2B product, and we connected with web developers all around the U.S. to help their clients accept payments. And we came up with a really innovative way to incentivize the web developers as well as the as a client to provide the best processing possible to these various merchants. And so, after about a year or two, I started noticing a couple things. Stripe was taking off around that same time. Admittedly, I found their solution probably to be a little more elegant. And so business was growing. There was a British company, and they made an offer at around that time to purchase our portfolio. And some of our largest clients included like Lids.com, the hat shop. We sold off our portfolio, and I was really exploring what to do next. After we sold our portfolio, I had a lot of time on my hands. And it was just kind of reaching out and trying to figure out, where I could position myself to get exposure to the latest innovations in payments. So I took a job with Merrill Lynch, and I covered emerging payments for the company. And we launched dozens of proof of concepts back then, with everything including Apple Pay to Paydiant to all these payment solutions that were at the time being promised as the most cutting edge form of transferring value online. And after a while, I started noticing the same things. The core inefficiency was having to deal with the traditional banking system. So I think most people, when they take an Uber ride or check out on Amazon, they don't really understand how complex a credit card transaction is and how much permission is required to get the payments all the way through. The common denominator of all these exciting and innovative approaches to payments, they were still all relying on this ancient infrastructure between the card networks and ACH transactions between banks. And so around that time, it kind of stumbled upon Bitcoin, and it was a completely novel approach. It cut out most of the inefficiencies in the system and replaced it with a trusted network type system. I'm going to avoid the term trustless here, but when I stumbled upon Bitcoin, I realized that this was the first truly innovative approach that I had seen to bringing commerce online.
When is this?
2011, 12, I guess. So okay. It's somewhere around that timeline now. I had a Dwolla account because Dwolla was one of those companies that were on my radar. Mm-hmm. And I saw, so I followed the steps, bought some Bitcoin off Mt. Gox through Dwolla, which is actually a really incredibly easy process at that time until they shut it off, and started kind of playing around with it, trying to understand the infrastructure behind it, and realized, hey, this is going to change the world. So I quit Bank of America, and sometime before that, met my co-founder Kent, and we started Purse with the mission of, hey, the Bitcoin, we all know, we all agree that Bitcoin is really revolutionary technology, but how are we going to get this into the masses? Why are mainstream users going to actually use this stuff? What does that adoption path look like if Bitcoin were to succeed? So we came up with the solution to build a marketplace on top of Amazon because we knew from the get-go that we couldn't match Amazon's inventory or logistics or any of these things. So we decided to build right on top of them. And the cool part, the innovative approach, I think, compared to all the other companies that were trying to do something with Amazon and Bitcoin, was that we created a market. We let people with Bitcoin set the discount that they want through reverse auction. And we allowed the market to determine what the discount should be. And over time, we noticed that this was much higher than we expected. 20% is much higher of a discount than we originally expected. So we kind of dug into that, tried to make this product easier to use, and so on and so forth. And today, we have the largest user base of Bitcoin shoppers in the world. And this year alone, we transacted over $2 million. Of which, a quarter of it just came from last month. And it's turned out to be, quite a successful product within the Bitcoin space.
Can you describe just a little bit about the different functions you and your partners, Kent?
Yes, we both share an engineering background. Kent is more technical than I. So Kent is the CTO of our company and manages most of the engineering efforts. I do everything else.
How much help have you guys had with coding and that type of stuff?
The very first thing we did was go through an incubator. We went through Plug and Play's inaugural Bitcoin class a little over a year ago. We worked with a lot of the Bitcoin companies there, and we had a lot of coaching that Plug and Play provided, including the likes of Andreas Antonopoulos and regulators and investors and so on and so forth. And we really started to build the team then. Today, we're at 6, with, I guess, 3 or 4 of us are working on the product, and we have 2, including Mad Bitcoins, helping with operations and marketing and business support.
I'd heard about things that worked with Amazon, as I was getting into Bitcoin on Bitcoin Talk. In fact, I guess it must be Kent, because I see a response from Mr. Kent with all this purse stuff on there about another similar service that I don't know if it ever got off the ground, got called GBSB, Get Bitcoin, Spend Bitcoin. But
So that was our first name.
Oh, that was you guys.
Yeah, that was us.
Oh my gosh. Oh wow, that's so funny. Okay, I didn't follow that. Looking at that thread, so that is amazing. That was you in October 2013. Is that right?
Yeah, so I, at that point, Kent was just kind of playing around with this idea. The original name was Get B Spend B, and it was getbspendb.com, I believe. We decided pretty early on that was a terrible name. But there are definitely remnants of it, floating around somewhere.
Well, I've got to tell you, when I first saw these people doing this, I thought it was really interesting, but I sure didn't want to touch it. I was like, oh, who knows, are these guys scamsters? Is it going to work? Is it, there seems so many things could go wrong. So it's all really amazing to me that you guys have gotten this far and are, obviously doing something right. So I actually used Purse for the first time, and I was kind of putting it off because I thought, oh, it'll be kind of a hassle, it'll be some work. I'd already signed up at that event, and I think that was pretty simple. So I was just shocked at how simple. I found a product that I wanted to order, and I basically just enter my address and pay with Bitcoin.
Yeah, so we've abstracted a lot of the complexity away from the user experience. So for users, and what we're really proud of is through Instant, the shopping process is as easy as Amazon. We've even replicated Amazon's trademarked one-click checkout process, which is called Snap, where we store an address on file, and if you have funds in Purse or funds in your linked Coinbase account, then there's no QR codes, there's no copying and pasting addresses, you just click a button and you're done. I think that making the process as easy to use as possible was a critical factor to our growth.
Just sharing it with, it was actually people in the Let's Talk Bitcoin Slack that I was going to be interviewing you and tried it and liked it so much, or I thought it was so simple was the main thing. So one guy's comment was that, I don't like the wish list thing. And I didn't see a hint of a wish list thing.
So there's two modes on Purse. One's instant, where you just get 5% off and it's very easy. The shopping experience is like Amazon. And there is the name your discount, which is a marketplace transaction that gets you higher discounts. And the name your discount feature requires users to build a wish list on Amazon. And many users do this already. I don't have the percentages in front of me, but you know, maybe people just find items on Amazon that they like and put it into a wish list. Well, we leverage that wish list property to do marketplace transactions. The reason why we do the name your discount or wish list in the first place is that the other party never has knowledge of the other user's physical shipping address. And we thought this was very important. If we were going to build a marketplace for Bitcoin, we wanted to have better privacy than eBay.
I want to stop you here and dig in because I was definitely curious about that. How do you achieve that?
You can tie a shipping address to any wish list on Amazon, and that address is only known to the user and Amazon.
Okay.
So, in fact, we don't even know it.
So my realization is the privacy is only if you do the wish list, but you don't have that privacy when you do the instant buy?
So if you do instant, just like Amazon, you have to let us know where to ship the items to. In that scenario, Purse knows your shipping address just like an Amazon transaction. But on the marketplace one, it's more private. Well, I mean, you're still trusting one company, which is Amazon, or through Instant, it's Purse. But it's you're not sharing your address to other users on our marketplace.
How is the information when I do an instant buy getting to Amazon and not being shown to the user who actually makes the purchase with Amazon?
Instant is a brokerage model where we purchase gift cards from our trusted buyers and use those gift cards to purchase the shopper's items. So it's more like, say, like Coinbase without the exchange, just their brokerage model. You tell them what they want and they buy the Bitcoins from somewhere and give it to you.
So there is no other party on those type of transactions.
So Purse is the other party.
Ah, okay. So that's why I was so confused. I didn't understand that part. That clears up everything. Okay. And so you pay, obviously, Bitcoin to these people. Is there a whole other market for you guys buying these Amazon cards, gift cards?
Buyers on our site have six different levels, and we, from our trusted buyers that have excess Amazon gift cards, we make offers to them to buy those gift cards just to us with Bitcoin.
Are you able to give like about what the exchange rate is for Amazon dollars, like to dollars priced in Bitcoin? Bitcoin priced?
Yeah, it really depends. It's a market rate as well. I mean, we determine it, but it depends on the buyer's level and how many transactions they've done with us.
But on average, can you say a number, or is that kind of?
It'll range anywhere between like 10 to 20%.
I didn't mention this to you yet, but I actually purchased a product that I sell as an Amazon seller. And so once it marks as shipped, I'm just really curious what I'm going to see. Because I can see, and this is something I don't know if people realize, but you see a lot of information if you're a seller on Amazon.
So right. So yeah, the thing about Amazon, and they do a really great job of this, is they run a marketplace, but they abstract away the two-party kind of system from them, so it looks like you're just buying from Amazon. And roughly 40% of Amazon transactions are conducted through a marketplace. And if you're an Amazon seller, you definitely know all about this.
Yeah, so I'm just curious to kind of see the transaction from that side, from both sides. I basically bought something that I sell that's fulfilled on Amazon, by Amazon. So.
Oh, that's crazy.
I noticed some kind of a wallet associated with Purse. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Sure. Every Purse account comes with a wallet where users can store funds for everyday purchases. It's not a wallet that we recommend for you to store your life savings, but on average, our active spenders store about a month worth of their Amazon's purchases onto Purse, so they don't have to manually do Bitcoin transfers for every single time they purchase an item.
So can you do just any Bitcoin transaction, send Bitcoin anywhere, or is it only in your system when it's in the wallet?
No, it's a Bitcoin wallet. You can send Bitcoins anywhere through our system.
And can you describe more like, is it a web wallet or is it code loaded? So it's an app basically in your browser, or how does that work?
Yeah, so today it's a web wallet. It's a hosted wallet. I mean, very similar to, you know, Coinbase or any other web wallet that you use like that. In the next week, we're switching to multi-sig, where we won't have control of users' funds. This is actually the first time announcing it in public.
Oh, wow. But, okay.
Yeah. So we have that in the works. It will be available next week.
So the announcement is a multi-sig wallet, basically.
Yes.
And do you have any good stuff that, like, you know, how your data is secured?
We have best practices in security in Bitcoin. We do frequent penetration testing. We're actually always being penetration tested by white hat hackers, we have security audits. We, in terms of our cold storage solution, I'm hesitant to describe it fully, but, you know, it requires multiple people to go to different safety deposit boxes and so on and so forth to ensure that coins aren't lost.
How has regulation shaped this project?
One of the driving forces for us to switch to a non-custodial multi-sig solution is around, you know, regulatory risk. But more important than that for us is security for users' funds and really doing what Bitcoin was designed to do in the first place. Early on, kind of when we were smaller, we were still trying to figure the things out, you know, how these transactions and escrows would work and things like that. And it was just easier for us to go with this hosted solution at that point. But, you know, I mean, at this point, you know, we have the development resources. There's better tools coming out to market that make these types of things easier. And there's really no reason for us to not move to a multi-sig wallet for users. That's what we're focused on today. From a regulatory perspective, we think of ourselves as very similar to a gift card exchange. Our marketplace consists of people who sell Amazon gift cards and people who shop with Bitcoin. So just like Cardpool or Raise or any of these other gift card exchanges out there before Bitcoin that exchange PayPal dollars for gift cards, we fall under that same umbrella, at least from a federal guidance level through FinCEN. FinCEN has this long exception clause for their money service businesses for what they call prepaid access, which is what gift cards and things like that fall under. Versions of regulatory statements like BitLicense, for example, that specifically call out custodial funds and the need for surety bonds for those types of things. And I think our new model for our wallets, our new wallet infrastructure, will help us mitigate any risks of that sort.
When I'm doing an instant buy and it's actually working with purse instead of a private person, it almost seems like you're acting in that case as a payment processor.
Or I see it more as just a merchant. You're buying something, an item from a merchant, and they ship it to you in exchange for your Bitcoins. You know, that merchant has to get the merchandise somewhere, right? And we use Amazon.
That makes sense too. What do you think are some of the things that really impressed you that you've pulled off? I mean, is there any technology that was really difficult, or figuring out the niche, or just getting people to use the system?
You know, when we first started off, and when I first even looked at Bitcoin from 2012 or something, when Mt. Gox was really the only Bitcoin company around, what we found missing in the ecosystem was practical reasons why consumers would use this stuff, would use Bitcoin, right? There is a huge hurdle into learning how to use Bitcoin. From everything from learning, you know, private public keys, how to store your private key and all these things, it's intuitively very different from anything that most people have done in the past. So our mission was to drive useful applications that would get anybody excited about using Bitcoin. Right. There's a lot of precedents for this. Decades ago, companies started publishing little coupons that they mailed out to households. What people would do is they would take a pair of scissors, dig through all the junk mail, find the coupon that they want, clip it out, remember to take it to the grocery store, present it at point of sale, scan it, and all to save a little bit of money, right? Well, so, you know, our thesis was that if we can deliver the best deals on the internet, people would be willing to learn how to use Bitcoin, And 20% off Amazon, I mean, is much better than $2.50 off toothpaste at the grocery store. And buying Bitcoins off Coinbase and learning how to use that and transferring it over to the purse and making a purchase is a lot easier than clipping out coupons. The same extends to the 21st century, where companies like Groupon develop pretty innovative ways. And if you think back to the original Groupon model, you bought essentially a coupon online, printed it out on a piece of paper, remembered to take it to the merchant, presented it as a form of payment. And people did this. I mean, I know most of that model's shifted to the smartphone now, and it's a lot easier, but people were willing to jump through all kinds of hoops to learn to save money. And so Purse's value proposition from the get-go was, we're going to deliver discounts at everybody's favorite retailer, right? Amazon has the world's largest inventory. And if we can figure out some way to give people discounts on that using Bitcoin, right, that this would be huge for the community. And so we started off with that mission, we're expanding to more, and I'd love to talk to you more about our plans as well. But what was really critical and what really stood out was that, and it was confirmation that people were willing to learn how to use Bitcoin and to save money.
How can you tell that people are learning to use Bitcoin rather than are already existing Bitcoiners?
So I think the first 6 months of our business, the product was probably a little hard to use. We saw, people that were really committed to trying to learn how to use this thing. We're probably all the only users we had. They were hardcore Bitcoiners, right? But when we started introducing things like Coinbase API or Instant, we started getting these support tickets from people that were like, well, I have a little Bitcoin left over on my purse wallet. How do I move this back to Coinbase, right? People didn't know how to do a Bitcoin transfer. And so that's a clear indication that they weren't existing Bitcoiners, that they came through Purse to just to learn how to do this. And another model that we see is that we see every single time we refer a Coinbase user to sign up and purchase Bitcoin. And lately, we've seen tons of users sign up for Coinbase for the first time and buy their first Bitcoins for the very first time just so they could save on Amazon. There has been a shift as we made the product easier to use, that we saw more and more people that had never used Bitcoin before, didn't know how to do a Bitcoin transfer, hadn't read their white paper, weren't on our Bitcoin, using our product. And that's been really satisfying.
I was going to ask you, what do you envision kind of for the long-term future of your company? But you sounded like you had some maybe shorter-term stuff.
They are kind of the same answers. So we've done three things, I think, really successfully over the past year. One is making spending Bitcoin easy. Two, delivering discounts. And three, providing liquidity, right? And that third piece, providing liquidity to people who had excess Amazon gift cards and now they can get into something a lot more liquid, was a really interesting discovery. But the ease of use and the escrow and customer protection and all these different things that we've done as a company for our Amazon application, we started to think, well, why couldn't we do this for everybody else? Why couldn't we add a way for people to, pay any merchant anywhere in the world the same way they pay on Purse through one click without doing QR codes or without doing, copying and pasting addresses and completely permissionlessly? So unlike, the other Bitcoin processors in this space, what we decided is we're not going to do any fiat conversions and we're not going to depend on any banking relationships. Which is somewhat ironic, considering my last job was at one of the largest banks in the world. But what I found there is that's a limitation in the innovations that a startup can take. And so the long-term idea is to leverage, especially more the more novel innovations in blockchain technology, to provide multi-sig escrows for any merchant that wants to partake in that. And so as a consumer, when you see this merchant accepting Bitcoin through Purse, you can rest assured knowing, A, that transaction isn't just going to be an irreversible transaction that you send to this no-name merchant. B, that Purse will arbitrate and provide support for that transaction if anything goes awry. And three, that merchant will receive Bitcoin without having to depend on any banking infrastructure. So this kind of goes back to my first startup, right? And the challenges that I've seen in businesses building online storefronts and really going back and providing value to them and telling them, look, you know, here's the alternative to paying, you know, 15% on a credit card transaction because you have some kind of minor history of chargebacks. You can take this permissionless system, we'll real-time settle to the merchants. Purse won't have any control of these funds and can't steal your escrow, and provide permissionless banking for the world. And the really exciting part about this is if you think about how many transactions that are conducted in person or with cash and don't have online business models. So I'll give you one example. So my wife and I are in the market for a house here in the Bay Area, and you know, that's a nightmare of its own. But we were looking at the foreclosure market and kind of looking at the process to, you know, to buy a foreclosed house, right? Because the prices here are ridiculous. What I found so surprising, right, in the 21st century in San Francisco, the process to buying a foreclosed house is on the courthouse steps, like at 8 a.m. on a predetermined date. Mm-hmm. And you bring a briefcase full of cash or a cashier's check and do that transaction in person. Right? How limiting is that process, right? Why can't a Chinese investor, you know, sit in Shanghai, bid on properties all around the world and with the click of a button, right? Well, if you really think about the way payments are designed, like this is like a really impossible scenario. Like bidding for you know, $500,000 house on an online platform is impossible with wires and credit cards today. Even if you're using wire transfers, you know, and the starting bid of a house was, say, $500,000. Well, so the first bid comes in, they wire you $500,000, or else you don't know if that guy has a $500,000 or not. The next bid comes in at $550,000, you take another wire, $600,000, you take another wire, and so on and so forth. And by the time the auction ends, you have like 20x the amount of funds that you need. Then it's a matter of reversing all these auctions, right? It's a really like crazy model to try to build online. And that model does not exist online because the payment rails today are limiting. Blockchain or Bitcoin blockchain or any blockchain technology really offers a very elegant solution to problems like this, where each bid can be placed in a smart contract, if you will, and each subsequent higher bid will create a refund to the lower bidding user. And, you know, we can create some kind of interface that says, you know, the new bid is $650. You do want to bid $700 or $675 or what have you, and build this all programmatically into the protocol. And, you know, these are the types of services that we're really excited about and looking forward to building the features.
Wow. So this is really the first, just a small step with those kind of goals. Does Purse make money in the short term, or is it really just looking for the long term?
So we make revenue. I don't want to disclose the percentage that we take. There was actually a Reddit article about our fee structure, but no, I mean, we generate enough revenue to cover at least two or three Bay Area salaried people.
You are six though, right?
Yeah. So we are six.
It's amazing to me what I thought of a business like this back in 2013 when I was reading about it, and to see what you've been able to do and then how lofty your goals are. It's pretty exciting. At the conference, you answered a question explaining who were the people who had all these Amazon cards. And I thought that was really fascinating. Do you want to kind of go over that?
Sure. People probably don't know this, but Amazon gift cards is the largest digital currency being used for remittance today. It's not Bitcoin, it's Amazon gift cards. And this is pretty fascinating. So there are dozens of platforms like Mechanical Turk in which people earn a living by doing some kind of task that they decide to do. And so the challenge here from a payments perspective, say you're Amazon and you're running Mechanical Turk, and 80% of your user base lives in India, Philippines, or Indonesia. Well, how are you going to pay those people, right? You can't integrate to all those banks over there. How are you going to pay them any value for their work? Well, so what Amazon did, and this is decades ago, is to start issuing Amazon gift card credit to their balance. So if you're a Mechanical Turk in India and you completed a bunch of tasks and you earned $50, rather than giving you $50, which they can't do, they'll send you $50 and immediately transfer $50 in Amazon gift card to your balance. There's $15 billion worth of Amazon gift cards floating around in the world today. A good big chunk of that is international, and representing maybe two or three times the market cap of Bitcoin. Further, there's dozens of startups that use these same exact rails to do things like that. So there's a Mechanical Turk version for smartphones called like Juno Wallet or Swagbucks, where people in India or what have you, or even people in the US that have free time, can just take these tasks or fill out surveys or something from their smartphone. Because these are, one, microtransactions, and two, international, these companies can't come up with solutions that that integrate with all these different banks. And the second question, even if you could, right, even if you could integrate with all these different banks, what you'll realize is, you know, in those countries that the majority of the population is unbanked, and that wouldn't do them any good. So what these people have been doing, people like Mechanical Turkers or people that are earning a living off of Amazon gift cards, their path to liquidity is ridiculously difficult. So what they'll do is accumulate, like, say, $500 worth of Amazon gift cards, buy an iPad from Amazon.com US, pay $70 in shipping, wait 2.5 months for the iPad to clear customs, pray that, you know, the Indian Postal Service won't steal their iPad. And once they get that iPad, 2.5 months later, they'll sell it to their friends for rupees. That's the path to liquidity for the largest digital currency in the world today. And Amazon gift cards, unlike every other gift card, can't be transferred through a gift card exchange. There are, like, technical differences, mainly due to the fact that you can't check the balance of an Amazon gift card, that make it impossible for third-party exchanges to transact Amazon gift cards. If they don't know what the value of the card is, and they can't just sell that to somebody or pay you for it, for that matter, we solve this kind of, like, low-hanging fruit problem in the world of digital currency remittance today. The reason the discount on purse is so high, it's 20%, the average discount on purse is 20%, is because it's that difficult for Amazon gift card holders to get to liquidity. We provide probably a bigger benefit to these people than people who are saving 20% on Amazon.
It sounds like a lot of people who are doing this are probably in lower income countries than the US. Is that right?
Yes, it is. We serve a global population. A big chunk of our buyers are in those three countries that I listed, India, Philippines, and Indonesia.
Any rough percentages? Or
yeah, so our spenders on the shopper side, it's roughly like 80% US and maybe like 5 to 10% Japanese and the rest European. On the Bitcoin earner side, we probably have less than 20% in the U.S., with 80% being international. So it's basically flipped around.
And why do you think Japan seems a little higher than I would have expected, at least 20%?
We didn't really understand why that happened. They are early technology adopters, and they're fascinated by Bitcoin. And it's also a country that has a huge credit market. So, like, loyalty programs, gift cards, and things like that are something that the Japanese users are very familiar with. They understand, you know, that, like, a $100 gift card from some merchant is worth less than $100 cash in your pocket or $100 worth of Bitcoin in your account. I'm sure a part of it happens to be the fact that Roger Ver, one of our investors and customers, lives in Japan, and it probably doesn't hurt that, like, we were on some blog that went viral in Japan that we tried to translate to understand what's going on. But it's a very engaged and active community in Japan. And so a couple months ago, we translated our entire support site into Japanese. We did our video in Japanese to try to really localize there and make sure, you know, they all understood how this worked. And we even have Japanese support. We have an intern that provides support for our Japanese users that may not be comfortable writing to us in English.
I hadn't really thought about you're attracting people to Bitcoin on both sides. I just thought about, oh, buyers want a deal, but people with all these Amazon dollars are probably finding Bitcoin as it's a way they can get out of their Amazon dollars.
A funny story here, there's a transaction that ended up in dispute. And when I looked deeper, it was between Roger and a Indian Mechanical Turk. Because Roger was using a third-party shipper, he was taking a couple, like, maybe a day or two longer to confirm than the Mechanical Turk would have liked. And in that conversation, there's a message thread between users, and you had this Mechanical Turk that was trying to educate Roger about how Bitcoin works. And Roger's profile picture and his username was just Roger Ver.
Uh-huh.
And this guy had no idea who he was. In the end of that conversation, I guess he was starting to get like a little bit frustrated. He was calling Roger Ver a noob in Bitcoin. And he was telling them, you know, this is how Bitcoin works. This is how escrows work, blah, blah, blah. I think Roger probably chuckled at that as well. To his credit, he was super professional and released his Bitcoin. But it was really interesting to see the kind of behavior, you know, because mechanical gift card holders really just see Bitcoin on our platform as a path to liquidity. They don't think of it as anything else. And I think that's really awesome because you know, Bitcoin's finding its uses as a remittance tool, really, through our platform, which is something that I would have never imagined in the start of this project.
Do you think the money goes back into physical currency? Or
you know, my suspicion here in India is that they're going to exchange. We did a partnership with UnoCoin, which is one of the largest exchanges in India, to kind of help smooth that path for them. But if I had to guess, Indonesia is another country where we have a lot of users, and their currency has been depreciating by like 20-30% year over year. And what these users will probably find is that, hey, you know, if I had kept Bitcoin instead of converting to rupiah after I got it on Pearce, well, like I would have more money next month, right? And that they'll eventually start, you know, trusting Bitcoin more than their local currency. And another point is that we do have buyers in Argentina and Venezuela who I assume are buying Bitcoin through our site for the same exact reason. You know, as a global trend, you know, as our users get more educated on each side, and it's already in their hands, I think that over time that people will start holding these Bitcoins instead, or holding as an investment, or as savings, or what have you, instead of switching to local currency.
Wow. Well, I had never thought about your company as doing so much to bring people to Bitcoin. That's pretty neat.
Cool. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, and thanks so much for doing the interview. I think progress on this permissionless kind of commerce platform idea is going to be huge.
Today's magic word is noob. N-O-O-B. Use the magic word and claim your share of this week's listener reward of LTB coin on letstalkbitcoin.com. You have 1 week from this episode's release to claim the magic word. To everyone who participates in the Let's Talk Bitcoin Listener Rewards program, congratulations for being one of the first to be hands-on with blockchain-based media. Can I ask you a couple more questions?
Sure.
I noticed I searched for Bitcoin under Amazon and I got six answers. Why those six with the Instant Buy?
That's dependent on whatever Amazon is returning to us.
Okay. So it's pure Amazon's choice of their top six?
Yep. The featured products, we curate that. But when you search, it should be identical to what you see when you search on Amazon.
Can you see that your featured products get a bump?
Yeah, we do. We do measure that. And we do try to update that and curate that as much as possible. The Ledger wallet, I mean, it's up at the top right now.
I noticed it.
It's because it's a product that we love and use and all the times, and it's available on Amazon.
Do you ever allow people to pay for a sponsor top spot?
We haven't yet, but we should look into that.
That'd be interesting to experiment with my product and see.
Yeah.
Let's make a deal right now in this recording. People can hear how it goes. No, I'd be really curious to try. I mean, even just for like a day, my little product is Bitcoin keychains. I don't know if I gave you one when I saw it. Did you get a Bitcoin keychain from me?
Yeah, I actually have it on my keychain. I was wondering where I got it.
If you'd ever want to just try an experiment with trying to feature my Bitcoin keychain, which is fulfilled by Amazon, I'd be really curious just to try it if you ever want to.
Yeah, we'd be happy to feature it.
That'd be cool. But it's fun. I'm still recording everything, so do you mind if I air this?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I'll probably edit it out. Thanks so much for listening to episode 24 of The Bitcoin Game. You'd make me a happy podcaster if you'd follow me on Twitter at The BTC Game. You can find a listing of all the Bitcoin Game episodes at thebitcoingame.com. See you next time.